It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 50 degrees under fair skies. Out of the airport, they have northwest winds to 8 miles per hour, 52% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day, southwest winds to 15. Rain tonight, though, at least after 10 p.m., low around 44 overnight, southerly winds gusting up to 35 tonight. And for tomorrow, rain early on, turning to mostly sunny skies, high near 51 tomorrow, west winds to 20, gusting to 35. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson has been inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. They're closing the campground in Juneau, where homelessness people live in tents. They're going to find new places to live, hopefully. And tribes have until December 30th to apply for one of five spots in a pilot program meant to encourage more tribal control of local schools.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Biden administration will be releasing 15 million more barrels of oil from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve in December. President Biden says that and other actions will help bring down gasoline prices nationwide, which are still on average more than 50 cents higher than they were a year ago. Biden also urged big oil to make sure gas prices fall in concert with oil prices.
My message to the American energy companies is this. You should not be using your profits to buy back stock or for dividends. Not now. Not while a war is raging. You should be using these record-breaking profits to increase production and refining.
At the White House today, Biden announced the government also planned to buy oil when prices fall to $70 a barrel from their current levels that are roughly $10 to $15 higher. Russian President Vladimir Putin has declared martial law in parts of Ukraine that he claims to have annexed but are still widely recognized as part of Ukraine. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports President Biden says Putin's actions are desperate.
President Biden says he thinks Vladimir Putin finds himself in an incredibly difficult position and is trying to intimidate Ukrainians into capitulating. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel says Putin is resorting to desperate tactics to try to enforce control over the parts of Ukraine he wants.
The truth is that Russia is not wanted in these regions, and the people of Ukraine are rejecting Russia's illegal invasion and seizure by force of what is Ukrainian territory.
The UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly to condemn Russia's attempted annexation of parts of Ukraine, calling it a violation of the UN Charter. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
A Food and Drug Administration panel made an unusual move today to withdraw a pregnancy drug called McKenna from the market. A group of advisors says the data don't yet show the drug prevents preterm birth and other complications. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports the drug is a test case for a controversial FDA program that allows drugs to get early approvals.
Sometimes a drug shows early promise treating serious conditions like cancer or, in McKenna's case, preterm birth. By accelerating approvals for those drugs, the FDA allows the companies to sell the treatments to patients before all safety and effectiveness studies are complete. But that practice has come under fire, especially when some of those drugs later prove ineffective. The FDA's advisory committee says subsequent data showed McKenna failed to live up to the clinical promise that won it early approval in 2011. McKenna's maker, Covis Pharma, fought the withdrawal, which will take another several months to finalize.
Yuki Noguchi reporting. It's NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson was inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame yesterday. She was notified of the honor back in June. Branson came to Kodiak in the early 80s and has served as the executive director of Kodiak's Senior Center for more than 30 years. She's been Kodiak's mayor since 2011. She's also a former president of the Alaska Municipal League. Past Kodiak inductees into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame include Branson's mayoral predecessor, the late Carolyn Floyd. Branson is one of 10 women in this year's class of inductees. The ceremony was held yesterday evening, virtually and in person, in Anchorage. The Mill Campground in Juneau isn't for recreation. It's a place designed for people experiencing homelessness to live in tents. But when the city shuts it down in the fall, those people need to find a new place to sleep over the winter months. Claire Strempel reports for KTOO.
David has lived at the Mill Campground for a few years. We're only using his first name because of the stigma attached to homelessness. He and his girlfriend have a tarp tent set up on one of the raised wooden platforms at the campsite.
It's got its problems, but, you know, I really do like it.
They have a fire pit and a burn barrel for keeping warm and drying out wet clothes. David knows the camp is closing down, but he doesn't have a plan for where to stay next.
I don't know. You know, I stayed in the woods last year.
They stayed in a tarp tent similar to the one they have set up here for 8 months. He said last winter the snow got pretty high around their tent, and it was really hard to keep things dry.
Yeah, but we survived. It would have been easy to do if I had a stove and water.
That's part of the reason the camp closes. The road up to the Mill Campground isn't serviced over the winter, so it's not possible to haul water and service the toilets up there. Dave Gosnell was on site Monday cleaning up leftover tarps and other belongings that people didn't take along when they moved out. He works for the city's Parks and Recreation Department, which maintains the campground.
Even camping out in the summer in Southeast Alaska is challenging with all the rain we get.
He says the city only leases the campground for the summer because the rest of the year it's too difficult to manage. Plus, he said, it's dangerous.
Certainly in the winter it becomes, life-threatening potentially with cold weather and snow and, tents would collapse under snow weight potentially.
The Glory Hall, Juneau's shelter, is getting ready for some people from the camp to stay there. Here's Luke Roman, one of the managers.
Yep, people are planning on coming here. We've already had a few people come and ask about space here. And what we tell them is we're very full, but we'll do what we can.
He says there's high demand for beds and sleeping spaces in the winter months. Juneau also has a warming shelter run by a local church. Its doors don't open until the temperature starts to dip below freezing. The church is still hiring staff and will likely open when temperatures get into the mid-30s. The city will finish closing camp down this week with plans to reopen in April. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Tribes have until December 30th to apply for one of five spots in a pilot program meant to encourage more tribal control of local schools. It's part of a new law, Senate Bill 34, which Governor Mike Dunleavy signed in July. The bill kicks off a multi-year process of creating state tribal compact schools. Compact agreements would allow tribes to develop their own K-12 curriculum independent of an existing school district. Joel Isaac, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development's tribal liaison, spoke about the law at the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage on Monday.
Compacting is a mechanism that is government to government. It's a partnership, it's a tool for communicating, and it's really about recognizing government-to-government agreements.
That process will start with a pilot program where tribes receive grants to establish new schools and offer input on future legislation that could make state tribal schools more widespread. Isaac says that makes this process unique.
Generally, it's difficult to be able to get all of the tribes in the state to sit down, like, how are we going to draft this? So what Senate Bill 34 does is it provides a framework for tribes to be able to help draft the legislative report for what needs to be in a bill to make compacting a reality.
Isaac asked attendees to share how they would measure a school's success. Aisha Twitchell heads the Academic Policy Committee for the Kinnick Cultural Charter School, which opened in Wasilla this year. She said enthusiasm from both students and parents was valuable.
We're measuring our success right now by kids being happy, wanting to be in school, and parents giving nothing but positive feedback.
Attendees also discussed the importance of language preservation at future schools. The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention will also include a panel discussion on Alaska Native education moderated by Isaac. It is scheduled for Friday at 2:55 p.m. Around 50 people have been transferred out of Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau over the past several months. That's about 20% of the incarcerated population. The Department of Corrections says people have been moved while the prison is repaired after recent rain events caused instability in parts of the facility. The Juneau Empire ran the story on Monday. Ben Hohenstadt is the Empire's editor. He joined KTOO's Chlorie Plesnack to talk about the situation.
So what do we know about the state of the building or the nature of the damage?
We know very little ourselves at this moment, again, citing security concerns. DOC spoke in very broad terms about the nature of repair work happening at sites at the facility. They said both aging infrastructure and extreme wet weather had contributed to a need for repairs to the building.
Talk me through the transfer of incarcerated individuals. Who's being moved and why?
Again, at this point, that's largely unclear. It seems that it's to accommodate this repair work. At this point, what we know is that 45 to 50 people were transferred amid renovations and repair work to the prison. We know that about half of that population was female.
Do we know where in the state they're being moved?
We were told multiple facilities in South Central Alaska was the destination. DOC generally stated that where inmates are taken to and specific identity of inmates generally not shared to protect both staff and the incarcerated individuals.
Is there any specific data surrounding the situation that stuck out to you?
I was surprised that it was approximately 20% of the population. That's a significant group of people in a community of a little over 30,000. 50 people is a lot of people, even over the course of several months. So it was somewhat surprising that the transfer had happened at that scope and apparently with relative speed and not a ton of information making its way to the public.
Do we know how many people are being moved or sentenced and how many are still awaiting trial? Is there any statistics on that?
That is not something I know at this time. I know that we're not done reporting on this. And we have several questions in and we've reached out to some folks who we believe may have been transferred, so hopefully we're able to get greater clarity into that.
So how is this affecting the lives of the incarcerated people being moved? I imagine that their access to visitation is now impaired if they're being shifted to new correctional centers. Getting to Juneau is hard enough coming from the outside. I'm just kind of curious how this is impacting their ability to reach people.
Right. That is something I would be interested in knowing more about in the coming days, coming weeks, as we're able to talk to folks. Based on what we know now, DOC says that the overwhelming majority of incarcerated people prefer to communicate remotely with family and legal counsel, and they should continue to be able to do that at other facilities. They're someplace different, and if they had been relying on non-technology to communicate with their legal representation or families or visitation, I'd have to imagine that would be impacted.
Do we have any idea when these repairs will be finished?
We had been told that they are working with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on the repairs, and that there is not yet a timeline for when the repairs will be done.
So, to be clear, Lemon Creek Correctional Center is not closing down. It is simply redistributing individuals to safer locations while construction is completed?
That's what we were told.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Ben. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Community members in Ketchikan came together this weekend to celebrate Filipino-American History Month at the second annual PhilAm Festival. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the event, which took place at a local high school, recognizes the contribution and history of Filipino-Americans in Ketchikan and around the country.
Alab ng puso sa dimdim mo'y buhay.
10-year-old Zofia Volkman opened the festival with a performance of a Philippine national anthem on stage in the high school's auditorium. High schooler Logan Merrill followed it up with a performance of the Star Spangled Banner on the violin. Then comes around to speeches. The superintendent, both of Ketchikan's mayors, plus some other political figures, including featured guest speaker Congresswoman Mary Paltola.
I stand here today and say with great confidence that Filipino-Americans helped build Alaska. And they continue to build Alaska, from our hospitals to our factories, our armed forces, and to our real estate markets. To put it simply, the history of the Filipino-American experience in Alaska is the history of Alaska itself, and it should never be forgotten.
Beltola jokes about a friend of hers who was born and raised in the Tlingit village of Yakutat.
When they went to college at UCLA, they realized for the first time that adobo was not a Tlingit dish.
Out in the commons, political figures are all over the place. Lieutenant Governor candidates Heidi Dreiges and Jessica Cook, Lisa Murkowski, aide Sherrick Klein, and State House candidates Dan Ortiz and Jeremy Bynum are out shaking hands ahead of the November 8th general election.
I love the fact that they're coming to our table, and that it, and truly our table, or you can see and smell the food.
Alma Parker helped put the event together. She says boosting voter engagement in the Filipino community is one of her goals as head of the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition's Sama Sama Tayo program.
That's how I propose this invite, is let you come to us as an opportunity to hear our voices in our own space around our own people versus us coming to you in a space that is community-wide.
Sama Sama Tayo is a grant-funded initiative that aims to improve health care for Filipinos in Ketchikan. And there are some booths you might expect from a health-focused program. Peace Health Ketchikan is offering blood pressure checks. The local public health office is running a vaccination clinic. Another nonprofit has a booth with resources for children with learning disabilities. But Parker says health isn't just about what shows up on a medical chart.
Health is mind, body, and soul, and our culture is part of that.
And it's around everywhere you look, even in the air, the smell of Filipino dishes like lumpia and adobo and pancit and more. Danielle Rodriguez is working one of the booths.
Cucina ni Mel, which means
Mel's kitchen.
Yeah, this is Mel.
Cucina ni Mel has been popular. We're not even midway through the festival and they've sold out a chicken adobo. Rodriguez says she's glad folks are enjoying the food.
We want to share our culture and our food with people, and I think food is like the best way to share that.
And take a bite of some sisig. It's deep-fried pork belly with garlic, onions, ginger, and a citrus fruit called calamansi.
Mmm. Oh, goodness, that is good.
But there's much more than food. There's Filipino trivia. There's blackout bingo. On one side of the commons, there's a rack hanging a few feet off the floor. It's decorated in red, white, blue, and yellow, the colors of the Philippines flag. It's strung up with streamers and candy. It's called a pabitin. It's kind of like a Filipino piñata, except instead of swinging a stick at a papier-mâché animal, you're jumping to grab hold of one of the goodies dangling from the structure. Children gather around. On a balcony high above, a man jerks the pabitin up and down, and the kids grab for goodies. KRBD had a booth, too. We set up a mic with a list of questions, and we got a few takers.
Hi, my name is Frederick, and I'm 28 years old.
My name is Ryan McHale, and I am 27.
Hello, my name is Grant Echohawk, and I am a youthful 47.
PhilAm to me is being able to enjoy and share my Filipino culture in an open environment. I think it's important to celebrate heritage, to keep culture and tradition alive for future generations.
So it gives all of the rest of us that are not of Filipino descent an opportunity to learn about Filipino history, culture, foods.
I wish more people knew more about how and why our community is as diverse as it is and sort of the history of that.
And one thing I wish more people knew is how delicious lumpia are.
Over at another booth, pediatrician Charlie Jose has a table with an array of photo prints.
So my booth here is a gallery of my photos that I took in the Philippines this summer.
There's a photo with a dragon fruit orchard. Another features a bunch of bananas hanging outside his family's home.
If you've ever tasted a banana in the Philippines and you taste a banana in the U.S., it'll never be the same experience.
He says he's glad to have this space to celebrate Filipino history and culture, especially for younger people.
It's hard to reconnect with your roots in the Philippines if you've lived primarily here. And you also lose some of that culture when you immigrate. I'm an immigrant myself, and I know that I've lost some of my culture. So it's nice to reconnect in different ways, and this is the perfect opportunity to do that.
Ketchikan High School Philam Club President Zarina Cabillo agrees.
The kids here don't really know anything about the culture because they grew up here, and having this festival is just really, really, really good for them, so they have an idea of what our childhood was.
She says she'd like to see more people learn the Filipino language, Tagalog, and become certified as translators. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A. by author Clinton Galloway chronicles the struggles he and his brother faced when trying to bring cable television to South Los Angeles neighborhoods, some of the most poor and disadvantaged neighborhoods in the city. After more than a decade of work, a trip to the U.S. Supreme Court, and several small victories along the way, Clinton and his brother were tragically, ultimately unsuccessful. To make matters worse, in 1993, the U.S. Congress passed a law stating that regardless of the civil rights violations that had occurred during the cable television franchising, there would be no damages allowed against any city in the United States. We spoke with him about this important book.
A lot of people admire Tom Bradley, and that shows the power of media. Once I got into City Hall and started meeting with these people, it was like, first of all, they're not very intelligent, and integrity is something they'd have to spell to know what it meant. So we got in there, and they found out that these guys are intelligent. They came from, you know, I'm handling big-time money in Beverly Hills. My brother's a doctor here. But the fact was, Tom Bradley was really one of the lowest people I've ever met. But when you meet these people, you find out, and I've met Maxine Waters, and, you know, she told us, hey, your constitutional rights don't mean anything to me because I work for the Democratic Party. That was told to me, to my face. So, you know, politicians don't mean a lot to me.
That's author Clinton Galloway on his book, Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A., which is available wherever books are sold. Read diverse, read indie. Is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday. It is Swedish Friday. It is the 19th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose at 8:53. It will set again at 6:54. That will give us 10 hours of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 59, set in 1929, and our record low was 22 degrees. That was set in 1915 and 2016. Currently 50 degrees under fair skies. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day. Southwest winds to 15. but for rain to begin tonight, mainly after 11 p.m., low of about 44 overnight with southerly winds to 20, gusting to 35 tonight. For tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers in the morning, then mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 51, westerly winds to 15, increasing to 20, could gust as high as 35 tomorrow. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 4:45 this afternoon. That will be a 4.2-foot tide here on the east side, followed by a high tide at 10:23 tonight. That will be a 6.8-foot tide. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 5:41 this evening. That will be a 6.1-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:57 tonight, almost 11, of 10.2 feet.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
Mariners, be aware, we have a gale warning for tonight for Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side. West 30 today, seas to 13 feet. For tonight, southwest winds to 35 knots, diminishing to 25 knots after midnight, seas to 15 feet. For tomorrow on our east side, west winds to 25 knots, seas to 13 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow. West wind to 25 knots, becoming southerly this afternoon, seas to 7 feet. For tonight in the Shelikof, south winds to 30 knots, becoming southwest 20 after midnight, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, west winds to 25 knots, seas to 7 feet on our west side. The friends of Wendy Beck and Harvey Goodell would like you to join them in the celebration of their lives today at 3 to 7 p.m. at the Buskin Beach House. Again, friends of Wendy Beck and Harvey Goodell, help them celebrate their lives at the Buskin Beach House today at 3 to 7 p.m. Bring a favorite dish and some stories to tell. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak will be hosting their new volunteer training. That will be happening tomorrow from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. for all volunteers, and on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for direct care volunteers. For more information and to register, visit their website at hpck.org or call them at 907-512-0600. And always fun for the kids, the Kodiak 4-H Harvest Festival and Pumpkin Sale is coming up this Saturday. That goes on approximately 12 to 2 p.m. or until the pumpkins are all sold at the Kodiak Fairgrounds. In addition to the pumpkin patch, it features hay rides, festive bake sale, kids' activities and games, fall photos, and giveaways. Free admission and cash or check accepted for pumpkins. Other activities are by donation. But again, that's this Saturday starting at 12 p.m. at the Kodiak Fairgrounds. Take the kids out there and grab a pumpkin. You are cordially invited to the 38th annual Stiles Clark Auction this Saturday, October 22nd at 5:30 p.m. at the Afognak Native Corporation building on Near Island. Seats are limited, so to get tickets, you want to go to the Stiles Clark Auction Facebook page. This event is for ages 21 and older, so you know it will be fun. Funds raised go to Santa to Villages, local nonprofit organizations, and they're used as grants and scholarships. Again, go to the Stiles Clark, that's S-T-I-L-E-S, Clark Auction Facebook page to find out how to get tickets. Please join the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center at the St. James the Fisherman Episcopal Church on Tuesday, October 25th. For their annual prayer vigil to honor and remember domestic violence victims who have died in the last year and in previous years at the hands of their abusers. Following the vigil will be a dinner and then the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center annual membership meeting. The vigil begins at 5:30 p.m., the dinner at 6:30 p.m., and the membership meeting begins at 7, should conclude by 8. To RSVP, Call them up at 907-486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org. Everyone is invited and welcome to attend both events.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.